Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that this podcast is presented by mybookie.ag and that if you use the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, that you will get a 50% deposit bonus on your first deposit. And given that you are a listener to this podcast, I would assume you're relatively knowledgeable about sports, and I would trust you to try your edge on the online sportsbook. You can lay down some money and get in on the action at one of the safest online sportsbooks in the world. It's the only one that I am currently using. You can wager on all sorts of different outcomes on mybookie.ag, soccer, football, any major league, esports. You can even create your own player props, which is useful for me because if you know anything about me, I do enjoy a good player prop. So if you deposit using the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, you get a 50% bonus when you deposit. And I will add this for listeners of the TakeCast. If you deposit using the promo code MATTEK and you send proof of it to me on Twitter, I will follow you on Twitter and you can have access to me via DMs whenever you want. That's the TakeCast bonus that I'm adding in association with the mybookie.ag deposit bonus. Now let's get back to the show. Hello everyone and welcome to the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. This episode today is with Jonathan Bales of the Action Network and FantasyLabs.com. I kind of consider Bales a friend, definitely someone to look up to in the industry, someone who has accomplished a lot. I think we have a really interesting conversation for people like all of us who like to wager on the outcomes of sporting events. I think it's a good discussion. I think you all will enjoy it, and definitely make sure to leave a rating and review on iTunes. If you did, in fact, enjoy the show, helps out a ton. Have a bonus episode coming out for you guys this Friday, thanks to you getting the show to, actually, by this point now, over 200 ratings and reviews on iTunes, and hope you enjoy the show, and if not, I hope you still leave a good rating, and let's get into it after this ad. Daily Roto is a mostly proud sponsor of the TakeCast, a mostly sports podcast. TakeCast listeners can save 10% at Daily Roto with the promo code JANIS, J-A-N-I-S. If you are playing on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto will help you improve your daily fantasy results this fall and save time in the process with lineup optimizers, ownership projections, fantasy projections, premium content, and much more. They have all the good stuff that you want to help you make money at sports betting and daily fantasy. Their new lineup optimizer will let you build optimal GPP teams with stacks based on their projections faster than I can punt money off betting on Peter Uihlein. Sure, you can play the guys that I recommend each week, but shouldn't you also get advice from a proven daily fantasy winner like Drew Dinkmeyer? Yes, I do have better hair than Drew, but I also have his cell phone number, and that makes me a winner almost as much as it makes him a winner of the DraftKings Millionaire Maker. And it's not just fantasy. They have tools to bet on player props, golf matchups, and a customizable NFL game simulator for this fall. Head over to dailyrodeo.com/premium and save 10% with promo code JANIS today. All right, everyone. I would like to welcome one Mr. Jonathan Bales to the show. Big time guest, big time get for me. Happy to have you. How you doing, fella?
Doing well, man. I'm honored to be on the podcast.
People don't know this, but we go way back. We go like legitimately way back to when neither of us were anyone in this little world.
Yeah, I mean, you were one of the first people probably that I knew and interacted with in fantasy sports. It was through RotoViz, right?
Mm-hmm. And back in the day, we used to combine our subscriptions that we had, and we created like aggregate projections for DFS for all of the positions, probably in like, I would guess like 2012. Like this was like 6-7 years ago.
Yep. Yeah.
That long was, journey, man.
I know. It was a different time back then. So much simpler.
So much simpler. I do think people get the wrong impression about you though, from your Twitter and from all of the lab stuff. I think that they get the impression that it's just all fun and games to be Jonathan Bales, and they don't really know how much grinding was involved. Like, really was not that long ago you were writing profiles of backup offensive linemen for the Dallas Cowboys. Like that was your main gig in football, right? Was like being a Cowboys guy.
for a little bit, I did. Yeah, I what happened was I was a huge Cowboys fan, and I just like for fun, I guess, I don't know what it was, started like collecting all these analytics by watching film, like every motion, the depth of their passes, if Romo audible, like every single thing on every play,
yep,
which was actually probably like extremely valuable to the team.
You should have been making way more than whatever you were making doing that.
I was making zero.
Yeah.
So yeah, more than that would have been good. I just send it to everyone in the, pretty much everyone in the organization. And horrible idea. It was worth a lot of money, probably.
They wouldn't have used it.
Theoretically, even today, they probably wouldn't use it. So,
I can say with immortal certainty that they would not use it because they're all a bunch of fish.
It's insane. It's insane. So around that time, before that, I had started a bunch of businesses, like very entrepreneurial, all of them very bad. Good ideas, actually, a couple of them, but just poor execution. I didn't know what I was doing, too young. I was writing a bunch for a bunch of different sites. And I was in college when I started that, and started like a blog to explore advanced Cowboys analytics, thinking,
oh yeah,
make a bunch of money. It was a sweet blog. It turns out there's not that much of an audience for advanced Cowboys football analytics.
No, that audience is very small because Cowboys fans don't give a shit about advanced analytics.
Yeah. So, and then just for fun, I wrote a book on fantasy sports, which I called Fantasy Football for Smart People, and published. And I thought it would do, I didn't know what was gonna happen, and it sold a bunch. So that's really how I got into fantasy sports. Was I thought I was good at it, and I wrote the book, and then I made money, and then I was like, oh, maybe I'll stop doing the Cowboys stuff and do the fantasy football.
That first book got plagiarized like so good. Like for like the first 2 years of like mainstream DFS analysis was just like pretty much ripped from that first Fantasy Football for Smart People book, like to an absurd degree.
Yeah.
So is the book how you got hooked up with CSU and the labs guys?
Yeah, the reason that I did the first book was season long, and that was like, I just was like so hardcore into season long that I was doing this stuff anyway. And I was just like, let me just see what happens with this. And then I did a DFS book really early, like 2011, 2012, right away, within DFS. And the reason for that was I didn't know how to play DFS. Like, I thought I was going to be good because I was good at season long, but I wasn't. And so I used it. I luckily happened upon writing for the New York Times. And so I would always use that, like, oh, I write for the New York Times.
As like an in.
Yeah.
To yeah. Meet.
And so, yeah, that's what I sent to Peter, like, to CSU. I write for the New York Times and I'm good doing this book. And of course he talked to me, and yeah, that's how I met him. But yeah, I used
it. Well, that's how you get CSU to talk to you. You have to name drop to some degree to get CSU to talk to you. And then once you do, he's all in.
Yeah, certainly. Now, I mean, back then it was like, back then it was different, but yeah, I mean, Peter's so good at recognizing, he's just the ultimate networker. He's really good.
Oh, he's like the number one goat at networking. Like, he's insane at it.
He's so good. But he knows when people are full of shit too. And he's just, yeah. So, but that book was really my way to learn DFS. So it was like, what strategies do you use and all these different things that I sort of disguised as I was writing the book, and it was for the book, but I learned a bunch in the process. So that was really valuable.
Yeah, and I no shame about it. I read like I think like the first three books that you did, and they were all great. Like that was at a point when I was still actively trying to like learn something in DFS every day, and that was like before you were inundated with content. Like a lot of people listening to this probably don't have any conception of what fantasy sports was like 5 years ago, but there was a lot of seasonal content. But if you wanted DFS content, it was like Dan Bach had his podcast in the morning on RG, and then there would be the video shows on RG. But as far as like really like kind of advanced analytical stuff, it like did not exist at all, even like legit 5 years ago.
No, there was nothing. I mean, that's why we started Fantasy Labs, like, and that was only I guess 3 years ago now, because I didn't think there was anything like it. And Roto Grinders was the only one doing anything for so long, and they were doing it to their credit, so much earlier than anyone else, at really high quality. But yeah, there was not much back then when I wrote the first books.
That's like a huge edge. Like the only reason that I make any money generating fantasy football content or daily fantasy content right now is that I just got into it like 7 years before anyone else who. Like I'm not going to say that there's anything super special about me or what I bring to the table, but it's all just like brand cultivation. And I got in at the good time, and you did the same thing. Like you just had to have recognized that this was like this massive unexploited market that was going to blow up.
Yeah. I don't think that's true about you. I think you offer a bunch of stuff that's unique, but,
thanks, yeah, Bales.
We definitely both. Getting in early is a huge advantage for sure.
Yeah, massive edge. Well, while we're talking about getting early, we're going to jump around in this agenda I sent you a little bit. I want to talk to you about crypto, because pretty much actually everyone else I've had on the show other than Safedin Amous, who wrote the Bitcoin Standard, has been like anti-BTC or anti-crypto. So I actually want to know from like another DFS guy's perspective, when did you get into crypto? Like, did you buy it to gamble with? And like, are you a Bitcoin dude, or are you just an investing dude with it?
Yeah, so I'm far from a Bitcoin or crypto or blockchain expert. I got into it maybe 18 months ago or something like that. Currently I only own Bitcoin and Ethereum. I was trading a lot, like for maybe 6 months, like all I was doing was figuring out just any research I could do on
Coin Labs.
Yeah, there might have been something like that. And I was really big into crypto and got lucky in so many ways with it. If I'm a Bitcoin maximalist, I think that Bitcoin is going to be really difficult to overtake for what it is, which is sort of like an online or digital gold type of thing. If that's how you think of it, I think that, it's been around so long. It's so simple. It has network effects. It's going to be really difficult to overcome. But I think that there's so many other uses for crypto outside of, just like a store of wealth. The biggest of which is smart contracts that I think like offer a ton of value. The fact that you could do like a trustless transaction with someone, like, I have this value to offer, you would like it. We don't know each other. We can trust each other. We don't need to go through an intermediary. Like you think about like Uber or something or Airbnb, they make so much money and
just being the intermediary.
Yeah. They facilitate transactions. So, and what do they really offer? Ultimately, it's just trust. Like, you know, you're going to get the apartment, you know, you'll get the car, you know, and on the opposite side, you know, you'll get the money, right? So like, if you can do that without someone taking 30%, then that makes sense. That's like, something that I think is really, really powerful and beautiful in a lot of ways. So I think, we're a long way from that being the case, but, definitely I think in like 10 or 15 years, smart contracts, like most businesses will ultimately run on the blockchain through smart contracts.
I would say even further than that. I think something that Uber and Airbnb and those other intermediary sites and apps that what they do right now that the smart contracts can't is they do tie it up in legality a little bit. Like basically they make it like if someone chose to rip you off in this sense, like they would definitely stop you because of like a legal threat. And smart contracts does not have that right now because there's no law implemented to it at all. And I think that's like one massive giant barrier for like pretty much every, you know, Ethereum and all the ERC-20 tokens.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right. I think it's a long way away. But that you know, you can certainly have some combination of those two things where we don't have to have some private company charging 30%, and you can have people verify transactions, and almost all of them are good. And once in a while, you have to have you know, the equivalent of an Airbnb step in.
Do you want to shill any specific altcoin right now? I'll shill one. I have one I would love to shill. If you
want one.
So my this is by far my biggest bag too, because when I like read about this coin, I actually kind of thought it was amazing, but it's QSP, and really what it is it's like a lawyer coin to back Ethereum smart contracts. Like obviously the white paper is a little bit more in depth than that, but if I was to give the elevator pitch for it, it's called QuantStamp, and that's literally what it is. Like it's like I think of it as like lawyer coin, and I that's one bag I refuse to sell because I like actually think there's a general future to it.
Did you have a background in law?
No. I'm a humanities guy. Like in college, I was all humanities.
English or something major.
Yeah,
right?
English.
For some reason, I thought that you had some law background. Yeah. No, I don't have anything to show right now. I don't have any like super strong opinions on anything at the moment, really. I don't.
I have a good one. Fuck Ripple. Ripple is the woat.
Okay, yeah, I have that opinion also.
Yeah, if you have that coin, get rid of it. Move it on to someone else. Let the banks find another way to steal your money. While we're on the subject of money getting stolen or people losing money, sports gambling is about to be legal. Obviously, something that a lot of people in our space are really anticipating, really looking forward to. You're in a pretty unique position with it due to your relationship with the Action Network. But I also just think that you happen to be pretty sharp and you see opportunities to profit in ways that a lot of other people don't. For example, you got Trump to win the presidency at what, like 500-1? Was that the number?
No, it was, I think, 150 or 75 or something. It wasn't 500, but it was
pretty,
really
still good though. Yeah. And so I guess, well, I know a lot of people listening to this show probably are not sharp and have trouble coming up with the ability to, you know, find those spots for opportunity. So I kind of want to hear Jonathan Bale's process on spotting opportunities, like ways like that in sports gambling, in the gambling sphere, to like generate profit more than just like churning out a 58 winning percentage on NFL money lines.
I mean every situation is unique, like the Trump
sure.
thing. Like I don't have I don't know anything about politics, truly. I know nothing other than I thought I had one opinion on that, which was that he was going to get people to vote more. And I think that people look at popularity more than just how many people are going to go vote. Like Obama did a really good job of just getting certain people to go vote. I got lucky on that one. But overall, I would say like it's less about like what you know and what instead like more what you know that other people don't know. So finding like hidden things that other people do not know is incredibly valuable. If you just know something, like even in sports, you like can predict the outcome of something. Well, like lots of other people can too. Like we all know that a certain guy is a really good value in DFS or whatever. The edge is in what you can find that other people can't. So maybe like the framework through which I viewed that election was a little bit different. And I would say that it was mostly shaped by Taleb, by anti-fragility. And so maybe just like reading and just trying to generally like have a process of always trying to learn. And
that's like a huge life leak that people have, is like not always trying to learn, not always trying to engage themselves in like more beneficial and positive things to their lives, like merely engaging in things as a distraction instead of as like a way to improve your mind or body.
Yeah, and it's really hard, like reading. I mean, you can always make an excuse for like why you can't read. It takes a long time, like there's nothing immediately actionable many times. Sometimes you read and it's useless, like, but when you read an amazing book, it completely changes your worldview in a way that's like so beneficial. Like just reading one book literally changed my life, you know, like the way I think about every problem.
The Nassim Taleb.
Yeah. And book. There's so much I don't agree with what he says. And I'm pretty sure I hate the guy. But there's like a couple, points that he had or insights that were.
He's apparently pretty trigger happy with the block finger on Twitter, I've learned.
Yeah, yeah, he's a fucking maniac. Like the guy's he's bizarre.
He wrote the foreword to the Bitcoin book, though, the Bitcoin Standard.
Did he?
Yeah, yeah.
I know he's super bullish. Yeah.
Yeah, he's in on it as a concept. I don't think he's like necessarily like a big Bitcoin like hodler or anything, but he's very in on like the concept of like sound anti-fragile money.
Yeah, in his most recent book, Skin in the Game, he talks about like the power of a very passionate minority and what they can accomplish, and that is in so many ways everything he was. If you reread that book through the lens of Bitcoin. Everything it makes sense and is very bullish for Bitcoin.
Yeah, no, I've never read any of his books. Give a quick summary of the anti-fragility book that changed your life to me.
The first one, I would start with Black Swan.
Yeah.
But anti-fragility, he really had this insight that the opposite of something that's fragile isn't something that is robust or, you know, something that can't be harmed. It's something that benefits from harm. So like examples of something that would benefit from being harmed are like humans through evolution, right? Like when there's chaos, when there's things that go wrong with our genes, that's actually really good for the overall population. Bacteria or viruses are anti-fragile. We keep taking antibiotics that make them stronger.
Yeah.
And in DFS, the way that I applied it was, let me think about all the ways that other people are thinking and the ways that they could be wrong. And if they are wrong, how would I most benefit? And so that leads to certain insights within DFS, maybe being super leveraged against a chalk pitcher in MLB or, just different things like that I never thought about before that were really useful for making money.
Do you DFS all sports now pretty much? Like, are you grinding, not all sports, but are you grinding DFS more or less 12 months a year?
No. I really only play MLB. And NFL,
yeah. I'm done. The NBA game, it's like, it's so hard to beat, and I kind of just waved the flag on that and admitted that I couldn't beat the games at like a meaningful dollar amount.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect example of something that is it's so predictable, right? But that is why it's not beatable. Like, I don't care how
everyone really has access to the same mod, like not the same models, yeah. But when you come down to it, the predictive modeling for the NBA, like you go to almost any website and the modeling is going to be built in a very similar way, at least to my understanding.
Yeah, it's because of the nature of the game, whereas NFL is, there's so much subjectivity. Like if you know something about like a cornerback or the way a scheme a defense is going to play, that's really valuable, right? Like
NFL is like NFL DFS really is like no one would ever admit this, but it's big time, especially with the wide receivers. It's like a field game. It really is.
I completely agree. And I actually think that the biggest leak people have is being too data driven. It's out of control.
First time anyone's ever said that on this podcast, like 24 episodes in, first time anyone said that people are too data driven.
When I got really good at DFS was when I still use the data, but I just use it to better enhance my feel of what to do. Like making the decisions purely based on the data in NFL, I think is not good.
Well, the data that exists for the NFL that we have access to also is not really that good, is part of the issue. Like I think like a lot of the stuff that we record is more descriptive than predictive. So it's really difficult to use that to make 100% of your decisions.
Yeah, there's useful stuff. It's just, you know, the situation changes, there's an injury. By the time you have enough data to explain what is happening, like the entire offense change or something. Like it's just there's not enough games. Like you need to just make a decision. A gut decision, I think. That should be informed by data for sure. And I use data for all the decisions that I make. But being too data driven in NFL, I think is actually a really big leak of
what's the best gut swap you ever made in NFL? I have like a very specific one in my mind, and I'm wondering if you do too.
Gut swap. I know the worst gut swap I ever made was.
Let's hear it.
This was like back in the RotoViz days. It was Keenan Allen's rookie year. I was like just starting to get some money, but didn't really have that much money. And it was the playoffs. And I swapped out Keenan Allen for Eric Decker in the playoffs. And Decker had... had a punt return that he was returning for a touchdown, just fell down. And then he had another touchdown that he dropped in the end zone. And I would have won 100K on that one. And instead,
that's brutal.
Didn't do that well. That one was sick.
So I have the exact opposite. This was in 2014. So this would have been the first year I played DFS for like actually any meaningful amount of money, like money that could change like how I felt about my Sunday based on winning or losing. And I swapped out, like it was some week where there was like two high priced wide receivers that were super chalk and I had them both. So the guy I had in my util was some bum. And I remember I was like walking to go get lunch or something after lineups locked on DraftKings. And I swapped off of whoever my bum was in the util to Matt Asiata for the second three touchdown game in week 9 against Washington. And like, he was horrible for most of that game, averaged like 2 yards per carry, but got the three touchdowns. And that was like, that's like one of the times where I was like, no data indicated that that was good, but it was just like total field play.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the swaps are, when you hit on a swap, it feels so good.
It feels so good, but then
like...
there's nothing worse than the swap off the dude who goes atomic. Like, that's like actually like one of the worst feelings I felt, real life, DFS, fantasy or not. Like, the swap off the guy who goes nuts is horrible.
It'll play mind games on you when you swap off of someone that goes off. But, the swap in general, I think, is a huge edge. And like, I think DK said like 1% of people swap. It's insane.
I think they said 1% of people swap in NBA. I would think that number would have to be higher. Like there are some sports that like NFL used to go over like multiple days. Like I can't believe that 1% of people swapped in NFL.
I guess I've seen some people that are like, you know, in the top 10 in the milli that don't swap. Yeah. They just don't even know that they, yeah, it's definitely an edge still.
It's true. I can't imagine them ever taking it away for like, cause like the sports I mostly play, like if they took away late swap in soccer, it would just be like, you couldn't even play it. Like it would be like unplayable. So I can't imagine them doing away with it. But I mean, if it's true that 1% of people are using it, maybe I should be using it more often.
Whatever percentage it is, everyone should be using Swap. Like, you make a lineup based on the information that you have, let's say an NFL at 1 p.m. Eastern, and then at 3 p.m. you have a bunch of information that would change your decisions, right? And
it really is just lazy not to be swapping after the noon games. Like, it really is.
I mean, NFL, they go out and they drink. Like, I do that. Like, you know, you go to a bar.
I mean, some weeks I'm not swapping, even if I am dead. Like, I'll cards on the table. Like, that's just how it is.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, so many people are, you know, they're just going out or watching the games or whatever. And it's a hassle to, like, log onto your computer at 3 p.m. and try to figure out, like, optimal lineup based on ownership and points scored and things.
Hey everyone, I wanted to take a minute to tell you about Apex Fantasy Leagues, the best place to play online season-long fantasy football for money. There is a skill-based format where you play 2 games per week, and there's industry-leading payouts where Apex actually adds money to the payout pool. They really ensure that the best fantasy players get the good return on their investment. Apex hosts 12-team PPR leagues that provide a variety of drafting options, live or email, snake draft or auction. You also have the flexibility to sign up for a league just hours before the draft. On top of that, Apex pretty often puts extra money from their profits into the prize pool to make sure that leagues get filled. Apex also offers dynasty leagues in a variety of formats. And finally, Apex is the place to play if you want to win big money in a format that mitigates randomness. Not only does Apex have the highest payouts in the whole industry on a percentage basis, but it also features both blind bidding, free agent acquisition budgets, so that all free agent acquisitions are fair, and 2 matchups per week, one versus a head-to-head opponent and the other versus the league average, so that, you know, you don't get screwed when your opponent has the most points and you have the second most points. You're still going to come out of that week with a win. You can compete every week without worrying about arbitrary strength of schedule. Give it a try. I promise you will love it. Go to apexfantasyleagues.com today and sign up. And now let's get back to the show. I don't want to say anything nice about him, but Fantasy Labs employee Sean Newsome is like, he's like the number one dude of all time of like going in and figuring out every game, like doing the math and who he needs to swap to. And that's probably been one of the only positive influences he's had on me. It's just like absolutely berating me to be like, you are an idiot if you don't go in and go check these swaps. And I'm like going through like $3 3-mans and just being like, oh, well, I guess I got to move Jerick McKinnon to whoever, and just like hating it, but like knowing it's the right thing to do.
It's an argument for using fewer lineups because the late swap is much easier.
Yeah.
Sean's amazing. He's really good at those niche things. Like he's good at college sports. He's good at soccer. He's good at, those late swap things, just things that other people, where there's not a lot of competition.
That would be any of you listening to this have only ever played NFL, NBA, MLB, my biggest advice to you would be to find a niche sport that you like to watch and just become like a legitimate like master of it, like knowing every player like top to bottom. Like, and obviously the reason that people don't do that is that the prize pools aren't there. Like, there's not enough money out there to convince someone to become a CFL guru just because like the max they could ever get off would be like $2,000 a slate or something.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully with sports betting, that'll change though, where you could, you just start by.
Yeah, you could. Well, you can do both. Like you can bet every game and you can have DFS, and like, it's much more rewarding that way.
I think that realistically within a couple years, even in those niche sports, if you know it better than anyone, you'll be able to, I think, get enough money down to make a living.
Yeah. Like right now you couldn't do it. It just would not be possible unless you played every niche sport. But like tennis started on DraftKings like 2 weeks ago, and it's like completely dead now. It's like the $33 GPP, I think, was like 80 people I saw for the other day, which, yeah. And I mean, it is like a totally terrible tennis tournament. Did you play at Wimbledon at all? Did you enter any of the contests?
No, I know nothing about tennis other than it's the one of the only sports that's like there's statistical proof that it's fixed, and like guys that it's impossible that that certain matches aren't fixed.
Really? I had no idea.
There's a lot of studies on how it's mostly with guys that are, you know, fringe. It's not like,
yeah, it's like challenge tour and like bottom end of the row guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cause they don't, they make almost no money. Those guys, like, they don't make a ton of money. And then, I believe the best guy in tennis wins almost all the time, right? It's like sort of like chess or something, where those top guys win. Is that right?
That I wouldn't know. But like I assume that tennis, like just from looking at the betting lines, it has to be something where like the overwhelming favorites have to win at like an absurd clip.
Yeah.
Like some of these, like I did play for like the first week of Wimbledon, and like they're just like routinely there'd be like a -8,000 favorite tossed out. Like that's wild. That doesn't happen in anything.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mean. Like -8,000 is insane.
Yeah, like that like even in like top level professional soccer where like one team's payroll could be like $700 million and the other team's payroll could be like $8 million, you still don't get to that extent. So it's like that was just like a wild thing to see from like a probability standpoint.
Yep. Yeah, you don't even see that really in college football too.
Which like I don't know, like what would Alabama have to be to get people to like bet on it over like one of these like bum schools? I don't even know.
Yeah, a lot of times those are huge when it's like a really, really big favorite. Those are good bets. Like those teams that are -50 are actually good bets. They should be like -70 or something.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
They changed that a little bit, but yeah, there was for a while you can make money betting giant favorites in college football.
I mean, it makes sense. Like that's like one of like the most uneven sporting playing fields in the world, really.
Yeah.
And football is like a less noisy game than soccer, which is also similarly like non-competitive.
Yeah, I don't know too much about soccer, but it seems like it should be extremely random because there's hardly any goals, right?
Well, yeah, like let's just say even like internationally, like France, right before France won the World Cup, right, and they weren't even really challenged at any point. They played most of their starters in a game against the U.S. men's backups, more or less, like 2 weeks before the tournament started, and drew 1-1. And like they were trying the whole time. Like stuff like that just happens in soccer.
It seems like you could just like completely outplay someone in soccer and get extremely unlucky because it's so hard to score a goal.
Yep.
Like you control the ball, you do everything, and just don't score.
Yeah,
and
soccer betting is miserable. I got waylaid like the first 2 weeks of the World Cup. I like got lucky on like some prop bets and put a big bet on France in the final. But I was like very close to being super stuck on soccer betting for the World Cup. So luckily didn't get there. While we're talking about DFS though, Jonathan Bale's opinion on showdown slates is what. This is super divisive amongst like DFS professionals.
Yeah, I think that I haven't really played showdown slates. I've looked at them a bit. I think that there's probably some edge in certain sports because people are. It's just like an ownership thing. Yeah, it's raked pretty high. And there's not like a very clear your edge in picking one player over another is small.
It's like razor thin at best.
Yeah, it's not like when MLB started and like certain people were stacking and other people weren't, and it was just like a very clear edge. So yeah, I guess my official answer is I don't know.
My official answer is nothing would make DraftKings happier than for showdown slates to become their most popular game format. That's my official opinion on it because it's so clearly beneficial for what it or FanDuel, you know, either site. Neither site would be they would be ecstatic, you know, if that was the primary format because of the churn, because of the rake, and because of the lack of edge.
Yeah, that could be the case. I think that one thing that's going to happen with sports betting, though, is that will sort of take the place of those games for them, such that they should go back to more complex games. And you know, there's a lot of reasons that DFS like can't be as big as sports betting or whatever. But like poker grew into this massive, massive thing. Poker's
and people were so bad at it. People were bad at it, but they still loved it even when they were losing.
Yeah. Yeah, they love it. There's like this culture of it. They mm-hmm. want to be like the guys they see on TV. Like, poker's extremely complex, way more complex than DFS. It's like really hard to learn.
There's like 19 levels to like every hand of poker that just like it's not there for DFS at all.
And that still grew in like the allure of DFS to me is that it's not like sports betting. It's a game, and it's a game that you can like figure out how to solve. And that process of like figuring out how to do that and learning from people and all these different things, I think is really interesting. And like they should, I want to see DFS, like traditional DFS, survive like that, because it's just a fun thing. And it's like, for 99% of people, it's an entertainment thing that they want to like go about learning how to do this. And sports betting is so different from that.
Yeah, it's like the primary value of DFS like should be entertainment at the end of the day, because long term, not that many people can win on it. And I don't know. I think the sites do realize that now. And I think that like a lot of, I think even like touts and like people that do DFS content realize that more so now. Like, you see much less people talking about like cash game selection and bankroll management and stuff like that. That kind of content is not near as popular anymore.
Oh yeah, for sure. The DFS sites have definitely changed the way that they've done things. I think that in the beginning they certainly catered to the big players. There was all this overlay, and they just wanted to get people sort of on board and get those power users, and then they moved away from that, which definitely made sense. But I think that in many ways you need to have some people making money. Like, you can't have everyone losing money. It's gonna die. You have to have some people that can make money. It's really, really important. It's really powerful. People look up to those people. They like want to live the life of someone, you know, like a CSU or whatever. And so that balance between...
If only the life of the Ram, you know?
No one has the life of
the Ram. No one has the life of the Ram. Yeah. Yeah.
But that allure of like, oh, I could have the life of the Ram. It's important.
It's huge. That's what I mean. That gets people firing. Like, I don't know. I do think there that's been like refreshing, though, is like in general, kind of post the Ethan stuff, like kind of like now that we're so far removed from that, people are able to have more honest and frank conversations about like what DFS and sports betting and all of this stuff is, which is like now that everyone's not just like, you know, tightened buttholes worried about, you know, getting arrested or the sites going away or whatever. Like, it's a much more refreshing environment now where we admit that like a lot of this is just done for entertainment and for fun.
Yep. Yeah. That's 100% true. And I mean, there was a time where I was like afraid to like post anything because I thought I was going to get fucking like audited or sued or something. Like,
oh, I had like a resume ready. I was like ready to go be rank and file. I was like ready to go work in some office somewhere. Like, I thought that was pretty inevitable. It was horrifying to think about, but I was like ready for it.
Yeah. And that happened, the Ethan Gate happened right after we started Labs too. It was like we had like great success early. It was amazing. Everyone was like on cloud nine, and then that happened immediately. We're like, what the fuck?
It was great. Like, I was like convinced like DFS was just going to be like this like immortality potion. You know, it was on ESPN every day. You couldn't get away from the ads. Games were soft. Like, people were, you were playing guys in head to heads. Like, they weren't checking their lineups. They guys weren't starting. Like, it was like, and then it just kind of all kind of slowly dwindled away, which was brutal. But like, I'm happy with like the way I play DFS and the way I engage with it now. But like, there was also like a learning period for me where I was like losing a lot like before I realized I couldn't beat like some games anymore, which sucked.
Yeah. I mean, definitely learned a lot. Definitely. You like kind of know it, but you have to go through certain things to actually like for it to change your behavior. And understanding that when things are going really well, they seem better than they are probably. And the opposite is true when you're like running bad or whatever, like it just seems worse than it is. It's really hard to actually comprehend that. Like when you're down, even in just like life things, like your girlfriend breaks up with you, whatever, it's never as bad as it seems. It's not, it's like not even close to what it seems in your head. And just logically thinking about things in that way, I think is like really hard to do, but really powerful.
So before we get out of here, I got to talk to you about the gambling Olympics, because it took over everyone's Twitter feeds for like 3.5 weeks, maybe longer, who could say. But I want to know what your experience was like. What was it like being around the mans, watching CSU win the 3-point contest? I would have shorted him hard on that. I would have just assumed no way, but apparently it was no problem for him, the 3-point contest.
Yeah, I don't think he wins every time. He probably out. I knew what he was doing. He was telling me that like almost every time in his gym, he would get like 90% of the time he would be above what the, I think the line was 59.5 or something, which is crazy. Like making that many threes.
That's like wild. That's nuts. Yeah.
That's really fucking hard. Like, but so I knew he had a good chance to do it, but I still didn't know that he was gonna, his average, I think going in, practicing was 65, but that was what in his own gym. Right.
Right.
In Denver, there's some, that actually,
some altitude. Matters. There's some altitude. Yeah.
That does matter. And just not being on camera and stuff, like doing it in front of people, there's pressure. He's really good with pressure. Really good.
He is. I'll give him that for sure.
He's actually like better under pressure. I'm way worse. Most people I think are worse. He's really good.
I'm probably better. I would actually say definitively I'm better when the pressure's on versus when it's off. When it's off, I'm likely to do almost nothing.
What have you ever had any like high pressure situations, like whether athletics or?
Well, I did competitive speech in high school and in college. That was like how I got scholarships to go to school and stuff. And like, yeah, I would just like, I would always do competitor, like the more competitive the tournament or the situation was, almost unilaterally, the better I would do, because I would care more. I would just be more focused.
Yeah.
Like that's just how my brain works. Like the higher the stakes are, the harder I'm going to try, the harder I'm going to dial in.
Yeah, I understand that, like your prep going in, but like the when you're actually in that situation, why do you think you perform better? Like, why do you think you perform better when people are watching or when like the stakes are really high?
I would say there is almost nothing for me as pleasing as like impressing people. And that's probably a big part of it. Like just like the ability to like, not only know you're impressing people, but like see like facial reactions and everything to people being like, shit, that's pretty impressive. Like that, almost nothing would be more satisfying to me than that. And so that's probably a big reason why like I would not shrink away from situations.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You should figure out how to put yourself in those situations more, maybe, because that's a unique skill. I couldn't do it.
It's like very vain though. Like not even the being vain.
Who cares though? Who cares if it's vain if you like, you know, can like reap some benefits from it by putting yourself in those situations, then just keep doing it.
There's got to be some edge. I have to find out how to exploit that in real life now.
I'm sure there's a way.
Yeah. So did you end up stuck, or did you end up a winner on the gambling Olympics? After all was said and done, side bets and everything?
I think I was the biggest winner in the gambling Olympics.
Hey, there we go.
I won the gold, which is great. Felt good. There were a lot of really good gamblers there. Brandon Adams, Scott Blunt.
BA is like the biggest trip to be around. That dude's so interesting.
I love BA.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
We had some good side bets too. I played him in rock, paper, scissors, one hand for 1K. Got that off him, but yeah, he beat me in some other things. BA is amazing. And then I had a prop bet, which we haven't talked about as much lately, but 6, 12, 18, 24. Do you know that?
Mm-mm.
I had to, in a 24-hour period, run 6 miles in 66 minutes outside in Vegas during the day. I had to jack off 12 times. I had to eat 18 donuts and drink 24 beers.
And you smashed that, right? Like that was like you, that was easy game.
It wasn't that easy. It was hard, but yeah, I won that one against
people. Lightning. People may not know this. You are legitimately ripped. For a DFS player, you're top 1% physical condition.
For a DFS player, I am jacked. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt.
not that much competition with the DFS players.
No, definitely not. Zero.
Levitan gave me 5-1 on that. So that one was good. And I won the pull up prop bet against Peter and then won the gambling Olympics. So, yeah, it was a good.
So that trip. was a very profitable journey into Las Vegas for you.
Yep. Yeah.
So there we go. You're set for NFL now. Like no way you can end up stuck after that expedition. If Levitan gave you 5-1 and you win.
Wasn't that much. I could be stuck after week one.
Well, let's hope not. Let's hope the salaries just came out.
Yeah, DK. I saw that. I saw the I think it's a good sign. I just saw the I don't know if they have anything else up, but I saw the $3 and it's flat.
I didn't even I was just looking at salaries and just being like, man, I can't wait for like half these dudes to be hurt, like looking at like which running back everyone will have who's $3K in the first week.
Yep. The $3 though is a $2 million tournament with only $200K up top, 200, 150, 30. It's a normal payout.
So, that's maybe a good indication of things to come.
Yeah, hopefully.
All right, what do you want to plug? But let's give me a good Fantasy Labs tagline before we get out of here. Give me a good sales pitch for it, or the Action Network, either or.
I have no plugs, man. I think people will
listen to the Three Donkeys podcast if you like what Bales had to say. Add another podcast to your list.
Yeah, I think if people follow me, then they'll find the work that I do, and yeah, no need to plug anything.
How many podcasts do you listen to? How many podcasts are you subscribed to?
I'm not a big podcast guy, actually. I like learn better by reading. I know that's most people listen. Like Peter listens to podcasts all day long.
Yeah.
He listens to Invest Like the Best, which I think is a really good podcast. There's a few that I listen to, but I just don't like taking information in that way for whatever reason. So,
have you ever done audiobooks?
No.
I would like legitimately recommend that for you. Like it's actually sick to be able to be like, I don't like, I walk my dog and like listen to audiobooks and stuff. Like I have the ability to like, or like when I go to the gym, like, cause you're two birds with one stone. Like this is like a total douche thing to say probably, but like listening to music is like, while it's calming and it's good for the brain, it's like, it's not the most productive thing. So I've been like trying to like not listen to music at the gym and listen to like an audiobook or a podcast or something instead.
That's when I listen to podcasts, is when I'm working out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's really productive. Yeah. Otherwise, I mean, the only time that I am like doing, like I'm always at home or traveling or whatever. I'm not like ever out except maybe to go eat or something. Like, there's not that many situations like most people have commute to work and back and stuff, and
not having a commute to work has to be the top one perk of like working in sports. I love it.
It's so big.
Yeah, I roll out of bed and go 4 feet to my office. It's fantastic.
Yeah. So most people, like, you know, like you know, you live in New York or something, you have to take the train and or whatever, and it makes sense to listen to podcasts and stuff. Like what else are you going to do? So yeah, I don't have that, but yeah, I'm pretty grateful that there's no commute.
There we go. Grateful for no commute. Jonathan Bales, thanks for coming on, man. And I'll see you guys soon.